In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.
Welcome to the Tool Shed, a podcast covering all aspects of fantasy baseball to help you win all of your fantasy leagues. From the MLB draft all the way to the show, we're here to help give you the edge in your dynasty leagues. Now, here are your hosts, Eric Cross and Chris Clegg.
Welcome into another episode of the Tool Shed with Clegg and Cross, brought to you by Rotoballer. This is episode 373. Thank you for joining us. I'm your host, Eric Cross. We have a great episode in store today. I predict you're going to love it. And with me, as usual, is my 80 great co-host, Mr. Chris Clegg. Chris, how's it going, bud?
Doing good. Just glad to be back and talking more ball with you. And, pitchers and catchers reported today, at least for one team, for Chicago Cubs, who start the regular season early. So we are back, baby. The Super Bowl's going on as we're recording. And for most, it'll be officially baseball season as soon as that clock strikes zero in that game in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, I can't wait for the tweets. Oh, it's officially baseball season.
There'll be lots of them.
It's always been baseball season here on the Tool Shed. And we're recording during the Super Bowl. I mean, the biggest thing that happened today in the world of sports was the Cubs reporting the spring training. I don't even care what anybody says. More than the Super Bowl, which currently, last time I checked, was 24-0. So not even a great game on there. But yeah, we get Cubs reported today, which is great. All the other teams reported on, I believe every other team is on the 11th or 12th. So within the next few days, we will have all 30 teams in camp. The spring training game is coming up in like a week and a half or whatever it is. I love it. Even though it's every other day, it's snowing up here in Maine. We had snow last Wednesday night into Thursday, last night into this morning, Saturday night into Sunday. We're getting more snow, I think, on like Wednesday and then next weekend. It's terrible right now, but talking baseball, writing about baseball, it's definitely helping me get through. So last two episodes last week, we did our American League and National League prospects to target and redraft. Those were a lot of fun. We ran through all 30 teams, a lot of names discussed. This week is our post-hype week. Episode today, we post-hype hitters. We get 10 names to talk about, and then we'll go over post-hype pitchers on Friday's episode. But before we get into everything, the usual housekeeping. You can find us on Twitter. Chris is at Chris Clegg, MILB. I am at Eric Cross, MLB. Show is at Toolshed Pod. If you enjoy this podcast, please rate and review. Make sure you check out both of our personal platforms, thedynastydugout.com and toolshedfantasy.com for more work from each of us. That's where all of our prospect and dynasty rankings live. And make sure you check out all the great content available with Rotoballer's MLB Premium Pass. Rotoballer's VIP draft kit comes with exclusive rankings and ATC projections from Nick Mariano and Ariel Cohen. It also includes plenty of content from Chris and I. Sync your leagues with Team Sync and use our live draft assistant and get customized expert advice for your league-specific settings. Our premium pass comes with a 100% money-back guarantee. Go to rotoballer.com/radio and use the code TOOLSHED at checkout for 10% off. All right, so let's start with, let's go down to Tampa Bay with Jonathan Aranda, who is, you know, had 333 plate appearances over three seasons, but really that's been very sporadic playing time for the most part. Until late last season, he started getting some run. Tampa Bay had some injuries. So in September, he got 85 plate appearances, had four doubles, five home runs, 253, 329, 507 slash line. It might be, you know, in line to get regular playing time this year as well, probably mostly at DH. Doesn't provide much defensive value. But Chris, in, you know, the short sample size last season, it was only 143 plate appearances total. It was a 16.5% barrel rate, EV of 92 miles an hour, 48.5% hard hit rate. And he was still, you know, hitting well in the upper minors for the last couple of years. So, and, you know, the bat's never kind of gone away. He just never had really a chance because he's kind of positionless, doesn't provide much defensive value. But I'm still a believer. I mean, the quality of contact is definitely there. Contact skills are solid enough. He's kind of right around league average, give or take. Last year was a little bit better than league average in both zone and overall. There's still a good amount to like here in the profile. So if he can get that playing time at DH, I mean, Eloy Jimenez is in the picture now, which is kind of random. But I still like Randa a lot, and especially given the very low price tag at this point in Dynasty Leagues, I think he's a worthwhile investment.
Yeah, Randa's pretty fascinating. You know, as I've been looking through like the positional rankings more so, I came away, really liking what I saw from Randa and feeling like there's a potential to for him to really pop off there. I mean, you look, the at-bats are going to be there for Randa. They're moving to Steinbrenner Field this year, which is the exact dimensions of Yankee Stadium, which like lefty's paradise. So Randa could really pop off there. You know, he ended the season quite strong. He had 5 home runs in his final 62 plate appearances and 273, 339, 582 slash. You kind of look under the hood, and I think there's certainly things to like with Aranda's profile. And I think that there certainly stands a chance where I think what does the breakout look like for him, I guess, is the question. Is he going to vault into like the top 10, like first baseman? Probably not, but I really like the underlying data when looking at him. So small sample in pro ball last year, but you look at the pulled fly balls that he had an average EV on those of 99.6 miles an hour. The underlying data looks good across the board. So when I look at Jonathan Aranda, when I see where he's going to play next year, and you think about the fact that there is the opportunity, even if he does platoon, he is on the strong side of the platoon. So you don't need him to get every day at bats, because I think he's going to get significant enough at plate appearances for it to work. Like, he may get 500, 550. There's plenty of at bats there in this lineup, and he could really perform. So, yeah, I think Aranda is a really good buy right now, especially if you're in need of a first baseman, which first base drops off pretty heavily. I mean, you look past that first kind of grouping, and it could go a lot of different ways. So, like, I'm looking at my rankings, like my first base dynasty rankings, and, I could see Aranda moving up pretty substantially. Like, do I think he could pass, like, a Michael Bush? Yeah, absolutely. I think that could happen. I wouldn't be shocked at all. Like, Nathaniel Lowe, like, he's kind of sneaky, but, I mean, it wouldn't shock me if Aranda kind of pushed up in that kind of range there. So, goodbye for sure.
Yeah, I like that you brought up the name Michael Bush. So I was kind of thinking, like, when you were mentioning, like, what does a breakout look like for him? I mean, I think, a best-case scenario a good scenario outcome would be somewhere between what, like, Michael Bush and Mark Vientos did last year. Like, I'm not going to predict the full Mark Vientos-type season, but these guys, Vientos and Aranda were pretty similar coming up through the minor leagues, especially with the bats. So, yeah, I definitely think he could get up there and be maybe not a starting first baseman, assuming he keeps eligibility, that is, but maybe he could be a good corner infielder. I think that's definitely like get up to Michael Bush or a little bit higher range where he's hitting 260, 270, 25 home runs, something like that. I still very much believe in the bat. So, very much a buy for me. And again, the price tag is super, super cheap, which absolutely helps. Next one here, Josh Jung with the Texas Rangers. He had a good 2023 season, 23 home runs, 75 runs scored in / 266, 315, 467. But he had 2 seasons limited to under 200 plate appearances last year, only 188, with a 264, 298, 421 slash line. And Chris, this was a guy that was, if not a top 10 prospect, kind of close to it, like a top 20 prospect, kind of at the peak of his prospect powers back in the day. But it's kind of been a very inconsistent showing from him, both at the plate and staying on the field over the last few years. So at this point, are you still looking to invest in Josh Jung, or is he a guy that's given the, the approach kind of going south, the injuries he's had, is he a guy you're kind of fading because of those reasons?
Yeah, I think you look, and the injuries have obviously been piling up, and he's continued to miss time with wrist injuries, which is concerning. I know you can classify some of those as fluky. At the same time, like, he's continued to have those issues. He underwent another wrist surgery this off season in October. So another concern there, he missed a good portion of the 2024 season because of, you know, some fractures in his wrist. And then he had another procedure to kind of clean up some issues with his tendon, which, yeah, that's a little bit concerning to me. You look at the kind of injuries year over year, and yeah, it's been costly. But I will say that if you like Josh Young and if you need a third baseman, it's probably a pretty good time to take a shot on, because I think his cost is probably the lowest it's been in years, I'll say, like dating back to, you know, even before like his later prospect days. So when we factor those things in, like what can we expect from him? I think it just totally depends on his health and how much he can stay on the field. But I do think there are certainly traits to like with Josh Young as far as how hard he hits the ball. He barrels the ball up pretty well. He hits the ball at ideal launch angles. You know, last year you look at the EVs, and while they weren't great, I mean, he still had some good upper end EVs. He got the ball in the air. When he got it in the air, he hit it hard, which we know he can get to power. He hit 23 homers in 2023, across 515 plate appearances. He had 7 last year, 188. So, I mean, you just look and you think he's going to run good barrel rates. And he did that last year, even having those issues in the wrist, which is pretty impressive to me. The exit velocity jump, I think, is notable from 2023 to 2024. That probably tells me he was playing hurt, because it's odd to see you drop from 92 mile an hour average EV down to 86. That's a substantial drop, but you know the barrel rate stayed prop pretty high at 10%. It was down from 12%, but 10% is still a really solid mark. That's largely because he hit the ball at ideal angles when he did hit the ball hard. So we know that the Young has that skill. The plate approach, it's not great. He's not going to take a walk. Like, we know he's going to run lower OBPs. He certainly plays better in an average league. He doesn't play great in average league. It's not like he's putting up like super high batting averages or anything, but you think that he could be a solid power bat. So he's worth taking a shot on in a deeper format. But if you think he can bounce back, I think it's a great time to kind of see if you can buy low in a dynasty league.
I'm not opposed to buying low on Josh Young, but I'm personally not running out there to do so either. I mean, the power is still there, and we've seen like when he's healthy, like look at his 3 years, like you kind of alluded to, Chris, where he's like, you know, was injured in 2022, quality of contact, like EV, hard hit rate were both much lower. 2023, they jumped up and then back down in 2024. But just given the walk rate being super low, the contact rates, both zone and overall, trending the wrong way. And he was down to 76.5% zone and about 68% overall, which aren't terrible, but I don't know, I just feel that the price is just probably still going to be higher than I want to pay. I mean, I'm not fully at the door by any means on a Josh Young, but yeah, I feel like I'm just never going to have any shares of him because people like him more than I do. I think he's, you know, healthy, could still be, you know, like a 260, 270 hitter, you know, with 25 home runs. I think this stuff is still in the cards, but I think this is still a lot of risk there with that wrist. You know, yeah, some of these have been fluky, but they've still happened. Is that going to, you know, continue to limit him to some degree? I just have a lot of questions, so I'm probably not going to buy low, but I'm not like, you know, again, not 100% saying don't do it. I mean, if the price is low enough in your league, he's still got some upside, so it wouldn't be a terrible investment by any means. Next one here, gonna sneak a catcher into the mix here. We got Joey Bart. He had a little breakout last year after not providing really any value first few years of his career and getting sporadic playing time. You now see Bart with, you know, a breakout year with Pittsburgh last year, 282 plate appearances, 13 home runs, 265, 337, 462 slash line. Still 28 years old. You know, feels like he's been around for a long time now. He's drafted back in 2018 at number 2 overall pick out of Georgia Tech. And again, didn't really have any substantial playing time or success in the major leagues. But he did have 11 home runs in 2022, but hit 215 that year with a sub 300 OBP. So last year was his best year, Chris. Do you think Joey Bart can build off that and maybe get himself into that back end C1 discussion where maybe he is a starting option going forward? Or would you use the, you know, if you even can sell high on a guy like Joey Bart, would you use now, you know, that breakout from last year to do so?
Yeah, I don't think you're getting much if you try to sell him, but it was an odd year for him, to say the least. Like, one of the tougher players to evaluate, in my opinion, because from the beginning of the year through July 8th, it was a 240, 333, 440 slash, 30% K rate, just 4 home runs. He did miss some time with an injury in there. And then from July 9th to July 23rd, it was a 23% strikeout rate, 302, 362, 558 with 8 home runs. Like, it was like an absolute torrid pace. And then he missed more time, returned in September, and he slashed just 241, 302, 345 with 1 home run, 29% strikeout rate in September. So it's a weird profile. He's got really strong bat speed. There's very questionable contact skills in Joey Bart's profile. You know, I really don't know what to expect. I mean, just being honest, like, this is a team that has Indy Rodriguez coming back, and Indy Rodriguez is talented. They have Henry Davis still. Is Davis going to catch some? There's all these questions, in my opinion, because honestly, Bart's not really providing behind the plate. Like, he's not giving you anything with the glove to, like, keep him in that lineup. So I think that's important to note. Is there power? Yes. Is there a decent approach? Yes. But are the contact skills a little bit scary? Yeah, I would certainly say yes to that. So at the end of the day, I have a really hard time with Joey Bart, and I don't know what to expect. Am I expecting a big breakout? No. Could he give you solid numbers? Yeah, I think so. But also, I'd be shocked if he lost the job either. It's just it's one of those weird profiles that I'm have really struggled with, like, what is the outlook? And I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, there are some things to like here. I mean, zone contact's been trending up the last few years. It was career best 84% zone contact, around 74% overall contact. He's chasing less. You know, the strikeout rate has improved a bit as well. You know, he's down to 24% and 26% the last 2 years after being well over 30% early in his career. So there are some things to like here. Like you mentioned, it could get really crowded there in Pittsburgh pretty soon. I mean, I think he could, if you're in a two-catcher format, I have no issues with Bart, but, you know, I don't think he's going to all of a sudden become a, you know, top 10 or even the top 15 catcher. Maybe top 20 to 25, something like that. Like I said, there are some good things here. The quality of contact is decent enough. 9.5% barrel rate, you know, 39% hard hit rate. So I think this year he could be, you know, building that a little bit, maybe be, you know, closer to 20 home runs if he plays more. But yeah, I'm not rushing out to get him. I'd rather go other ways with my catcher position. See, next name here, we got a couple of corner infielders to round up the, kind of the infield section of this show. We got Jose Miranda and then Miguel Vargas, who might play some outfield. I'm not sure where exactly he's going to fit in with the White Sox, but we'll start with Miranda, who had a, you know, kind of a fun little rookie year. He had 15 home runs, hit 268 in 483 plate appearances. Then 2023, only hit 211, 263, 303 with 3 home runs and 152 plate appearances. And last year kind of got kind of right of the ship a little bit. Only had 9 home runs, but a 284, 322, 441 slash line. You know, Chris, the, you know, Miranda's an interesting profile. I mean, doesn't have great power. You know, quality of contact is pretty middle of the road, but he doesn't walk a lot either, but he doesn't strike out. He puts the ball in play. He was 87% zone, 78% overall contact last year. So he's aggressive, chase rate's a little high, but puts the ball in play, and he's good for like 15, 20 home runs. I mean, is it crazy to think that, you know, if everything can click for him this year, maybe he gets close to, like, I don't know, it might be a little bit high end outcome here, but like Alec Bohm territory, maybe he gets on that being a solid corner infielder. I think that could happen. He's still only 26 too.
Yeah, it's definitely kind of interesting to see what happens with Jose Miranda, because he's gonna have to hit. This team's got a lot of bats. It's got a lot of guys coming that, you know, it's kind of a crowded situation right now, and at the end of the day, like, I think it's only going to get more crowded soon because there's a lot of good bats in this system. You know, Miranda's he's playing first base now. He's played some third, obviously. Got Royce Lewis over there as long as he's healthy, but like, who else is on the way, and like, how long does this stick? Like, Edward Julian's not a great second baseman, so that could be kind of interesting. And while there's not a lot of like first basemen on this minor league roster, like there's certainly going to be, you know, competition for at bats in this lineup. And I think some inconsistencies with Miranda do lead to a little concern. It's like you look at the surface numbers from Miranda last year and you're like, all right, like I think he had a pretty decent year, but there were a lot of ups and downs too. He was another one, as we talked about, that was like Bart, who was really streaky at times, where yep. he would put on and be really good for a short stretch, and then he'd kind of fall off. You know, he, as you mentioned, it's puts a lot of balls in play. He's aggressive. He makes enough contact, but it's limited strikeouts and really low walk rate, just due to the fact that, you know, he's just kind of putting the bat out there, putting in play, and seeing what happens. When you look at the splits, it's kind of interesting because July, I think it was like June, July, that that stretch run really happened where, yeah, I mean, it was only four home runs between those 2 months, but he was hitting for average, he was getting on base, and then it all kind of fell off a bit in August and September. He didn't even play full-time in September either. He did have a lower back strain, which, you know, that's a little bit of a concern. So it is something to note with Miranda. Could he be really good? Potentially. I feel like I'm just so wishy-washy this episode, but I really have struggled with Miranda as well because there's minimal value in the, with the glove. He's going to have to hit. How much does he hit? Like, that's the question. Like, which hitter do we see? Did the back just affect him down the stretch? Like, it's also possible, like, he was playing with that lower back injury some, which hurt him down the stretch. But you look, and, like, if you filter it, the game logs to, let's see, when he kind of started the downtrend. Like, August 6th, we saw a bit of a start of a downtrend, I guess. So, from August 6th forward, while it was just 131 plate appearances, it was at 198. Average 221 OBP and a 286 slug. No home runs. He did have 3 triples and 5 doubles, which is fascinating, especially the triple side of things. But, you know, what do we see? I mean, 39 WRC plus, like, that's not great. You look at the, this underlying metrics are interesting because he chased at a 40% clip over that span, but he also made up for it with a 90% zone contact rate. And then if we look at, like, the StatCast data, he's had just a 2% barrel rate. So, that obviously killed him a bit, and I don't know. I'm kind of more out than in on Jose Miranda. I don't know if he holds that spot for a while, but, yeah, we'll see.
Yeah, I'm not – I'm kind of middle on Miranda. Like, skill 1 to 10 in terms of, like, buying back in. I'll give it, like, a 5.5, maybe a 6. I'm not going to go higher than a 6, though. Because I think there's still some – so good underlying, you know, metrics here, but like you mentioned, like there's a lot of bats for Minnesota, more coming up, you know, so it's going to be, you know, obviously he doesn't provide much defensively. You're really pretty bad defender overall, so that bat is going to have to be good for him to stick in that lineup, and he's only shown in, you know, 2022 was solid, and then since then it's really been like that middle season stretch last year where it was good again, so... I haven't seen it a lot the last couple of years. I still get it's in there somewhere. So given the low price tag, I'm okay buying back in. But, yeah, I'm buying back in cautiously, let's say. This next guy, last infielder on the list, though he's kind of an outfielder as well, Miguel Vargas. I mean, talk about having your perceived value take an absolute nosedive. Yeah, Miguel Vargas, that's the case with him. That's what's happened the last few years. Because we're still waiting for him to hit over 200 in a season. 2022, he hit 170 in 50 plate appearances with the Dodgers. 2023 was 195 in 304 plate appearances. And 2024 was 150 in 237 plate appearances, which he was hitting 239 in 30 games with the Dodgers. Got traded to the White Sox and proceeded to hit, get ready for this, 104. 217, 170 in 42 games with the White Sox. I mean, nobody wanted to play for that team. Can you imagine going from the Dodgers to the White Sox? Like, that must be the biggest gut punch like that a player could have right now, especially in the game of baseball. But, you know, there's still, you know, there's still some good things here. Like, I'm not 100% out on Miguel Vargas. I mean, he's still been hitting very well in the upper minors, you know, last year. He had a contact rate above 81% in AAA. Zone was about 85%. Quality of contact still kind of been average to slightly above average in the upper minors. Still pulls the ball and elevates at a good to ideal angles there to maximize the power he does have. Just has not worked out at the major league level. But even with the, you know, at the major league level, the metrics have not been terrible. You know, the metrics don't fully match up, or at least not with contact. Contact was still 78.5% last year at the major league level, though the quality of contact has been pretty below average. But walk rate's still good, K rate's still pretty solid. So there's still some things to like here. And Chris, given the absolutely dirt cheap price tag, any interest here from you?
I don't think so. I think I'm fairly out. You know, you kind of refer to it. Some of the underlying's interesting, but he hasn't really been able to translate much of it to the majors. You know, with the zone contact, it's takes a pretty big dip from AAA to the majors. The power metrics are not great. It was a 101 ninth percentile exit velocity in the majors last year. It's about 2.5 ticks below average. Low barrel rate. He doesn't hit the ball that hard in the air. I'm just a little bit worried about Miguel Vargas. I mean, they're going to give him runs, so like I think that that's, you know, he's going to play, but how quickly could he lose a spot? I mean, there's a lot of bodies on this team in this system. Like, they've got a lot of these kind of similar bats. I think anybody could kind of, you know, fit in this picture, and I don't know. I've had hope for Vargas that he could put it together, but I think I'm kind of done with that at this point, just given, you know, this situation with the roster. And again, this is the worst roster in baseball, so, you know, he should be able to easily find time. But where's the value come in? Like, I'm not sure Vargas provides any value with his glove. If I remember right, he played some second base at one point. They tried him over at second.
That was terrible.
Wasn't good. He's played some outfield. He's got a strong arm. Like, he can play third. I'm just not sure the glove's decent enough to, like, be out there. Roster resource hasn't penciled in a designated hitter. And Vargas, this isn't a DH type. Like, I get it. There's nobody else there. But with minimal power, like, that's not the DH that you really want. I mean, there's just a long list of guys knocking on this team to get playing time. I mean, just to the top, you've got Edgar Caro, Kyle Teal at catcher. So, you know, they're going to have to figure out that situation. I mean, the reality is they could probably bring up Tim Elko or Bobby Dalbec and get more production at the DH spot, like from a power standpoint. I know that Elko's not debuted. Dalbec has had his, you know, his run. He was loved at one point and hated. But there's a lot of guys where it's like, okay, they're at any point, like, they could bring up a number of guys from Charlotte and AAA, and they could fill this spot if Vargas doesn't hit. So there's going to be a lot of pressure early, and I'm not sure that he's going to do enough to keep it. Like, nothing in the underlying really gives me a lot of hope, if I'm being honest, other than a low chase rate, which, okay, cool. Like, if you're hitting 150, doesn't matter if you get on base at a 250 clip and you chase at a low clip and you walk, because you're still hitting 150, and a 250 OBP ain't going to play.
Right. Man, Bobby Dalbec still is one of the best displays in batting practice that I've seen in the minor leagues. Like, that guy could absolutely pull him to the pole side, or crank him to the pole side, I should say. I swear to God, there's a Hadlock Field that runs kind of right near the interstate in Maine, Interstate 295. And it's a couple hundred feet from the wall to the, you know, interstate, so there's no, you know, nothing's gonna get out there, but I swear to God, he came close one time. One, he absolutely mashed in batting practice, went like halfway to it. So, love Dalbec, love that power. But I mean, I think the reason why I might give him a chance is just because A, it's gonna cost you literally nothing. You can either A, pick him up, or B, give away absolutely little, you know, back end prospect or something like that. So if it doesn't work out, no harm, no foul, and maybe it does. Maybe he turns into at least something. I mean, I don't think it's going to be, even if he does kind of find his footing, I don't think it's going to be super exciting, but could he still be like a top 200 player? Maybe. I'm not fully ruling that out, but given the low price tag, he's like, at least get a shot to start the season. I'm not 100% opposed to it, but yeah, like Chris said, he's going to need to hit, or they'll just go on to the next name, but maybe if he finally gets some regular playing time, you know, maybe he will start off the season hot. We'll see. Maybe we'll see him, how he does in spring training, and that'll definitely help. But yeah, not a lot of interest here, but, you know,
for dirt cheap or free. I'm not opposed just to getting a share or two to see how it goes. All right, let's go on to some outfielders here, starting with big bad Jordan Walker. Well, I tweeted out, I think it was a few weeks ago, that he's still younger than, it was like right around like 25 to 30 of my top 100 currently for my prospect rankings, which people forget that he's still only 22 years old, debuted at 20. And yeah, it's been a very up and down 2 years for Jordan Walker. He's been up and down from, you know, the majors, AAA Memphis, and back and back and back. Production at both spots has been pretty inconsistent as well, but still hits the ball hard. Now, we know that. Last year, 9.5% barrel rate, max EV 115.5, average EV 91, hard hit rate 43%. But the K rate ticked up last year, still hits too many ground balls, which is the issue. But, you know, contact skills are solid, especially in zone. Overall is a bit low, but still has some upside here. And Chris, you just did a nice video breakdown of him as well over the last few days. So it's still a very intriguing name here. So how willing would you be to kind of buying into him right now as a post type guy? And what kind of player do you think he can still turn into long term?
Yeah, I mean, I think that what I discovered with Walker is that he actually lifts four-seam fastballs really well. So he hits those well. He makes a lot of contact with those, but he pounds pretty much everything else on the ground. Changeups give him fits, like negative launch angles on changeups. Sinkers give him fits. And the issue really comes down to the fact, like, I was looking at like pitch locations for AAA. He was getting pretty poorly located changeups that, like, he just couldn't do anything with. Sinkers play best down. Like, and sinkers in AAA were actually pretty poorly located, like up and in on him. Like, he was getting jammed and just he hit him into the ground. Like, that's where he got the majority of those pitches, which is kind of interesting. But I do think that there's still some hope. Walker did finish the year quite strong, had a big September at 5 home runs upon coming back up, and put up some pretty decent underlying numbers. He hits the ball hard when he gets in the air. He can pull it, and with power to the pool side, like good EVs to the pool side as well. I think that there's still hope for Walker, as you mentioned. Like, and one thing I did note, if he had gone to college, gone to Duke, he would have been draft eligible in 2023, and we probably wouldn't have seen him make his major league debut at this point. Instead, he debuts out of camp to begin 2023. He's thrown into a new position where he's terrible. I mean, he's not comfortable at all. It's clear. And he's trying to basically swim in a complete sinking environment. He needs to get out of the outfield. Where does he go? I don't know. Is it first? Can he go back to third? Probably not. But if he can handle first base, I think the bat improves. He is making some swing changes this offseason, so that is something to watch, like out of the gate in spring training, to see how that plays. I will be very fascinated. But I still believe in Walker. I still think there's plenty of juice in that bat, and I think he certainly makes enough contact to make it work. So he's got to lift the ball a little more, and he's got to figure out how to hit some of these pitch types that he's really struggled with, including changeups and sinkers, which I think is his biggest struggle of hitting those into the ground far too often.
Yeah, hitting the ball into the ground for him has always been that issue. In last year, 50% ground ball rate. The year before that, it was actually only 47% in his rookie year, but yeah, still, like, there's still a lot of good characteristics, a lot of good metrics here for Jordan Walker. I think there's still a chance of him being, like, you know, a 260 to 270-ish hitter with 25-plus home runs. I think that's still, that outcome is still in there. So, yeah, I'm not even remotely close to being out on Walker. And maybe he's not going to be as good as I originally thought, or a lot of us originally thought, but I think there's still, you know, potentially like a top 100 player, like back in top 100 player, you know, outfield two or something like that for your dynasty team. I think that outcome is still there. So, yeah, I definitely still willing to buy in on Jordan Walker. And this next guy, that meme, you know, just when I thought I was out, they pulled me back in, you know, this guy is the epitome of that freaking meme, Joe Adell. Last year, finally was fantasy relevant at the major league level. Had 20 home runs, 15 steals, and 451 plate appearances. Slash line was still kind of meh, 207, 280,
402. But Chris, there were some improvements here with Joe Adell. I mean, K rate came down, still high, but 28%. It was at 40 or close to 40% each of the last 2 years, albeit in small sample size last year in 2023. But he improved the walk rate, dropped the K rate a good amount. Quality of contact went up. Barrel rate was near 12%. Heart hit rate up to about 45%. Zone contact improved by 6%. Overall improved nearly 9%. Chase rate came down. I mean, there's still some warts, absolutely. I mean, a lot of these numbers, even though they improved, are still below average. Like, you know, the contact rates, you know, K rate, walk rate, et cetera, they're still below league average. But even if Adell is just like a 230 guy, you know, with, he'll still have a low OBP, you know, 300-ish OBP. He's never going to be an asset there, but he went 2015 last year in 451 plate appearances. I mean, is it crazy to think that if these gains that we saw from him this past year stick, even with a lower average OBP, like a run at like a 25-plus, 20-plus type of year is still in there because he's still a premium athlete. You know, bat speed is there. Power is still there. I mean, he's got that power-speed blend, and I'm kind of hoping these improvements stick because he's a really fun player when he's on. Obviously, still plenty of risk, but I'm not sure if I'm, like, running out to, you know, try to trade for him right now, but I'm definitely intrigued again after being close to 2 feet out the door over the last couple of years.
Yeah, I mean, at least know that the power speed's going to be there, right? Like, he hits the ball hard. He's got really good foot speed. He steals bases. So, yeah, I think Joe Adell is pretty interesting from that standpoint. And you look, and yeah, I mean, last year was a lot better in a lot of ways. He got the most plate appearances of his career in the majors, a lot more consistency, and with that came improved contact and results. I mean, 20 home runs and 15 steals. He was caught 10 times. So that's a bit concerning. Like, how long is he going to continue to get the green light if he's not successful at high clips? I mean, the bat speed's off the charts here with Adell. It was a 90th percentile bat speed. It was around 77 miles an hour. Just really good. He's still got good sprint speed. The barrel rate near 12% is very strong. Hard hit rate of 45%. Those are really, really good numbers. There's never been denying any ability to hit the ball hard from Adell, though. I mean, we know that that's been the case for quite some time. His average EV on fly balls last year, 94, on line drives, 99.5. To me, the growth that I really like to see is in the contact. I mean, the zone contact rate jumped by about 6 percentage points. The overall contact rate jumped by about 9 percentage points, so a massive leap there. The chase rate did fall. The chase rate was below or right at MLB average, which is encouraging. Still high. I mean, you still want to see it come down, but he's had a 3-year improvement on the chase rate, which I think is pretty encouraging. From 35% to 31.5%, now 29.7% this year, according to Savant. So that's an encouraging sign there. I mean, 9th percentile exit velocity of 109, like, that's absolutely scorched and top of the scale. If he hits the ball at ideal launch angles more often, then he's really going to be cooking with something here because the launch angles are super inconsistent. The sweet spot rate of 30% is low. He doesn't square up a lot of balls, and he pops up a lot. I mean, you look at the bat at ball distribution, while the ground ball rate was down, he still hit pop-ups at a 9.2% clip. That's really, really bad. So with Adell, I do think there is stuff to like in the profile. I love that he pulls the ball in the air quite often. You know, 50% of his fly balls are to the pool side. I'm kind of buying in. If you can stomach that there could be a low batting average, then I think you take the risk because the power speed is a lot of fun.
Yeah. Like I said, would it shock you if he ended 2025 as like a 28-21 or something like that season? It wouldn't shock me at all. But yeah, it's probably going to come with a low average. But at least he's back on the map after being off the map for a couple of years. This next guy, very fun, very polarizing profile, though. Former 2020 first-round draft pick, Garrett Mitchell of the Milwaukee Brewers. And last year was his first extended kind of run in the major leagues, 224 plate appearances, 8 home runs and 11 steals, slash 255, 342, 469. I mean, I've seen people that think he's like the next star in this game, and he's going to be a top, 50 player at this time next year. And I've seen people that are just, completely put off by the red flags in the profile because there's some durability concerns. The contact skills are very bad. I mean, he was 71.7% zone contact last year, overall around 65%. He strikes out over 30% of the time every year so far. But, there's some power there. He's a good defender. He's a premium athlete, 95th percentile sprint speed. So, but there's a lot of fun in the profile in areas that people love for fantasy. But can he, and he walks at a good clip too. So the OBP will probably be solid. But can he, hit for a decent average? Or is it always to be 250-ish or below? Can he stay healthy? So there's a lot of, good things, a lot of bad things, a lot of what ifs here with Garrett Mitchell, Chris. So kind of where do you fall on the wide Garrett Mitchell spectrum here?
I think I want at least one share of him to see where it goes. Because there are some intriguing skills for sure. I mean, I mentioned the bat speed plus sprint speed combo for Jodell, and that's absolutely the case with Garrett Mitchell. Might be even better. So very strong bat speed, near 76 miles an hour, and he had 95th percentile sprint speed. Mitchell's strong in the field. We know that. He did pop off last year in just 224 major league plate appearances at 8 home runs and 11 steals. So that's encouraging. The whiff stuff that you mentioned is certainly an issue. The launch angles are a bit of an issue due to the fact that he hits the ball on the ground so much. He had a 56% ground ball rate in the majors. So that's a major red flag for me. There's going to be so many ups and downs, I think, given those issues. He may run hot stretches where he gives you some home run and stolen bases throughout the week, and then he may have weeks where he just strikes out too much and it's on the ground too much to do anything at all. The fascinating thing is, you mentioned, the contact's pretty poor. The minors, it was better, so I have hope. He had an 87% zone contact rate in AAA, so I know it was a smaller sample last year. Don't look up the exact number of plate appearances in the minors, but you at least know that it could be in there. I want to pull up, I don't want to just quote, I mean, he's had 61 minor league plate appearances, so I don't want to look too much into that sample, but still hits the ball hard, a 111 max, a 9th percentile near 106, so plus power there. Average launch angle, very poor. That's obviously a major hindrance when you're hitting the ball on the ground as much as he is and running a 2.8-degree launch angle. But he does hit for some power because he hits the ball incredibly hard. So when he does get in the air, there's damage. Average EV on line drives, 96. On fly balls, 95, so very hard when he does get in the air. He just doesn't pull the ball enough either in the air. He had a 15% pulled fly ball rate last year, which is bottom of the barrel. So if Mitchell can put it together, if he can focus more on contact, then I do think there's some intriguing traits. Obviously, he went, people are excited because he went to driveline this offseason. That obviously hypes a lot of people up. It's the new thing, he went to Jared, no, he went to driveline, and Mitchell was there. So how much does it help him? We'll see. We've seen hype from other players the previous few years, and they went to driveline and didn't pay off for hitters. So he was hit or miss. We don't know, but as long as Mitchell's healthy, he's going to be on the field because he's so good with his glove. He provides a lot on the base pass, and he's a pretty solid hitter too. So yeah, I think that there's a chance he could break out. I want at least one share to see where it goes, but I struggle to really go all in on him because of the injuries, because of the whiffs, and the ground balls.
Yeah, it's going to be fun. If it clicks, it's going to be fun. Same with Adele. Both these guys, the upside is pretty high for fantasy. I mean, Mitchell has it in him. If everything clicks, we're talking about maybe low 20s home runs, 35-plus steals, something like that. The upside is pretty high and higher than most on this list for fantasy. But yeah, it's a lot of red flags here, but I agree with you. I definitely want, I think I have one share in Dynasty. And you look at the players that had, a bat speed above 90 or 75 miles an hour and the sprint speed where Garrett Mitchell had, there's not many hitters in baseball that have that combination. Sucks that he didn't have enough plate appearances to qualify for the bat speed leaderboard. Otherwise, I could really kind of dissect it to see how many hitters, kind of ranked where he does in both of those categories. But yeah, definitely a lot of fun. Even if he's kind of like the same thing with Adele, lower average. The OBP will still be pretty decent. And, you know, the power speed is there to go, like, again, 20-plus, 30-plus, something like that. So, and that defense will help keep him in, you know, through the ups and downs. So, yeah, I still like Mitchell a good bit here. I've always been a big Mitchell guy ever since, you know, ranking him in FYPD rankings way back then. So, kind of really intrigued to see this year. I think this would be a really telling year for a guy like Mitchell. Not a make-or-break year, but can you stay healthy? Can you finally start putting it all together for a full year? And that'll be very telling for sure. Last two names on the board here are both on the Minnesota Twins with Matt Wallner and Trevor Larnach. It's actually the second and third Minnesota Twins hitters in this episode. Matt Wallner last year, yeah, both Wallner and Larnach actually played, you know, somewhere around half a season, give or take, but both had pretty solid years. And Wallner, the last 2 years, he's been right around 250 plate appearances. You know, slash line was pretty similar both years. You know, hit 14 home runs and then 13 last year, so 27 combined in his last 515 plate appearances. You know, last year was at 259, 372, 523 slash line. And Trevor Larnach, 259, 338, 434 with 15 home runs in 400 plate appearances. With Larnach, though, I mean, he improved the strikeout rate by about 12%. Still walking above 10% of the time. And the K rate was well above 30% each of his first 3 years. It was down to 22.3% last year. Zone contact jumped 9%. Same with the overall. Those are now at 85% and about 73% overall. It's definitely improved there. He's more in a strong side platoon role now, but you can still have some pretty solid value in a strong side platoon role, where I think the perceived value on him and the price tag is low enough where I would definitely be interested in a share there. What are your thoughts on Larnach, Chris? Matt Wallner, who's, you know, still has a bit of a strikeout issue, but has obviously the massive power. So maybe bigger range of outcomes here for Wallner than Larnach. But what are your thoughts on these two guys? And are you looking to buy in right now?
Yeah, I mean, Wallner's an elite play in an OBP league. Puts up very strong on-base percentages and comes with a big pop, too. So that's obviously helpful. I mean, he hits the ball incredibly hard in the air. The barrel rate in the majors last year was 17.5%. So that's highly impressive. Top of the scale, EVs, hard hit rate, barrel rates. Bottom of the scale, whiff rates. So you look, it's kind of polarizing, as you mentioned. The zone contact rate on Wallner was 68.8% last year. And the overall contact rate was pretty much in line with it. Does take a walk, though, which is good. He does hit the ball with impressive strength. And I don't know, I kind of just think that this could be a year where we see him put it together more. We know that the juice is in the bat. If he gets 500 plate appearances, then what kind of damage are we talking about here? I would not be shocked if Wallner put up a career best year pretty easily, because he just has to stay on the field to do so. The traits are there. The power's there with Wallner. I am pretty excited about his potential. It's just, can he make enough contact and can he stay on the field for a full season? We haven't really seen that him play. He's only got, well, I guess last year he had, how many did he have? Went to Wallner's 261 last year, played appearances in the majors. Larnach had 400, so a little bit more of a sample last year from Larnach, and I thought he showed some pretty interesting things too. He also hit the ball quite hard. He had a 92-mile-an-hour average EV, a barrel rate north of 10%, solid hard hit rate. And while it's not flashy, like it's not like elite, like Wallner, like it's still really good quality of contact metrics. Also helps that he squares up the ball, he hits at ideal launch angles. That'll play. And the contact skills aren't nearly as bad as what they are with Wallner. You look, and his zone contact rate last year jumped pretty substantially, up to 85% from 75.5%. So a 9.5% jump in zone contact is huge. The overall contact rate jumped about 8.5-9 percentage points. So pretty big stride there for Larnach. Low chase rate. I mean, the chase rate's right in line with what Matt Wallner did. He's run some solid OBPs, not to the level that Wallner has, but Wallner gets all the buzz, and Larnach kind of under the radar here, like as I'm looking a little more. I like the profile where I'm pretty intrigued to see what he can do this year. I'm looking at Average EV on line drives near 96, on fly balls of 93. Very strong ex-WOBA cons. Last year was 405. Previous years has been even higher. Good max EV. He had a 107 mile an hour ninth percentile exit velocity. Solid sweet spot rate. Good pulled fly ball metrics. Like, I'm kind of intrigued by Larnik a little bit more than I was before, just kind of looking over the profiles where we're talking about him here. So I'm kind of in. I like both. Wallner is certainly a good play in OBP league and a points league that, you know, doesn't take negatives for Ks. But Larnik is pretty solid profile too. He might just be somebody to invest in.
Yeah, you know, I was kind of a similar thought process with Larnik, where, you know, he was someone brought him up in my Discord, you know, I think it was about a month or so ago. I started looking into him a little bit more, and that was right around the time I was going through the outfield a lot for some of my content, and I was like, oh man, look at these, some of these improvements here, and it really had me intrigued. And yeah, I think Wallner and Larnik are both pretty good targets. Obviously, with Wallner, that high K rate is still very, very concerning, as is the, you know, the zone contact rate consistently being under 70%. So I think there's a better chance of that average going down than up. But like Chris said, the OBP is always going to be solid. It's always walked at a good clip throughout his professional career, even in the minor leagues. And the power is just truly, truly elite. So I think there's good value for both these guys. I think the perceived value on both is probably lower than it should. But something here, I was looking at the ATC projections for the Minnesota Twins. And you look at there's two good names that are back-to-back here with Matt Wallner and Royce Lewis. I'm going to list off both of their projected lines here for, you know, home runs, RBI, average, OBP, etc. Lewis, 252, 317, 462. Wallner, 235, 335, 460. Some more average for Lewis, more OBP for Wallner, basically dead even in slug. So slash line altogether, probably could cancel out. Then the, you know, counting stats, Lewis, 23 home runs, 64 runs, 71 RBI, 5 steals. Wallner, 24 home runs, 62 runs, 68 RBI, and 4 steals. Basically almost even there as well. I mean, who knows what ends up happening. Obviously, Lewis has his warts and upside as well. But yeah, I think Wallner and Larnik both are pretty good values here on this Minnesota team heading into 2025. They look at their ADPs for redraft. I think Wallner was like 275 and Larnik like 330 or something like that. So perceived value hasn't really jumped a whole lot, even with them having pretty good years last year. And I think both are good values right now. So but let's close up the show before we get out of here, Chris. As we talked about 10 names total here, rank your top three, like the three biggest buys out of these 10 for you right now.
Three biggest. Aranda, pretty confident there. Walker, if you're willing to have a little more patience, I think could fall in that category too. Then probably I'm going to go Larnik. Larnik or Wallner, but I'll take Larnik there because I just talked him up a lot.
Yeah, so, I mean, I like, as a grouping, I like the five outfielders more than the five infielders you're talking about. But I would go, I'll go Mitchell, Walker, and Aranda, but, you know, Adele, Wallner, and Larnik right there too. And I think the bottom four being Young, Bart, Miranda, and Varnett. But I would definitely recommend all five of these outfielders, Walker, Adele, Mitchell, Wallner, Larnik, and Aranda especially. Those six are kind of the biggest buys for me right now heading into 2025. But that will wrap it up. We'll do the pitcher version of this on Friday's episode. But until then, everyone take care.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.